NBA basketball fans, welcome back to the NBA Banter Podcast. It's usually NBA Playoff Banter Podcast, but you know why we're not really calling it that at this moment. But anyway, we are back. I'm Chris. He's Marshall. And we're here to discuss a whole lot of stuff basketball-oriented. Now, NBA stuff we're going to start with. Then we're going to go college basketball stuff. I know that last week we said we were going to cover some college basketball stuff, but it got a little long, so we figure, well, we're not going to drag it out for another 20 or 30 minutes talking about stuff. So we figure we just kind of push it in there. So we are going to talk some NBA news first. Then, of course, we got to talk about the last two episodes of the Last Dance, of course. So we'll break all that down, whether it's the Pacers roster in that series in Utah, in the pizza game. The pizza poison game, not the flu game, although he could have still had the flu and maybe it wasn't, but who knows. But we'll talk about the push off. That was a clear push off, but nobody on the documentary could admit it. But we're going to talk a variety about that stuff. Like I said, so NBA news, The Last Dance, then some college basketball, college football, just college stuff in general. The NCAA came out with a couple of new rules that you're like, huh. We'll also talk about some potential effects from the one-time transfer rule that they're kicking around. I was going to say in Congress, but not Congress. They're not kicking around like Congress. They're kicking around in, the Congress of NCAA. So, but if this is your first time listening to the NBA Banter Show, you can find it right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoperadio. It streams live at archives. But if you want to find this show, you got to look for it under the Rope It Over Radio podcast. Now, you don't have to go to Blog Talk and listen into the browser or download. Plenty of people do that. But if you don't want to, that's cool. We are available under the Rope It Over Radio podcast at Apple Podcasts, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spreaker, Stitcher, really all over the place. Tune in is what I meant to say. I think I said Stitcher twice. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found all across the board, including Spotify. You can use your Siri or Alexa through Spotify or TuneIn or whatever to find the platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's boxing, it's baseball, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. That's betnow.eu, promo code TGT, as in the grueling truth. One more thing. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have, you're not quite happy, or, you know, sports are going to start to kick in on ESPN and hopefully other channels in June and July, I got something for you. I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have the 7-day free trial. The plans start as low as $55 a month. There's no annual contract to tie you down. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now. Like I said, live streaming cable. Now, however, if you have just mediocre to poor internet where you live, whether it's by an airport or you're just out in the sticks, wherever it is, there is another option, AT&T TV. Now, that's like a normal – now, the Now is not in there. I kind of said that. AT&T TV, that's the normal growing platform for a cable outlet. That's available here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in New York, parts of Florida, parts of Texas, parts of California, all the way up to Seattle in the Northwest. Other places in the Midwest like St. Louis. It is, like I said, a growing network, but it's available in a fair amount of markets. You could try AT&T TV. Just Google it, put your area code in there. Otherwise, AT&T TV Now, live streaming cable. Okay. Well, what's going on, Marshall? How the hell are you, man? Another week goes by. And next Sunday, dude, at about 8 o'clock Central, we're going to be looking and be like, well, isn't there more episodes of The Last Dance?
Yeah, I wish. I wish there was. I actually kind of try to enjoy them as much as I can last night. Like I would watch 10 minutes, pause, check Twitter, text a friend, text someone, pause. I mean, I think episode number 9, it took me about 1:40 to complete. So it felt longer than it was. And that was actually a great episode. But yeah, The only positive, though, for next Sunday is we got Tiger Manning versus Brady and Phil. So, I mean, it's not Jordan documentary, but I'll gladly enjoy 3 to 4 hours of Tiger and Brady and Phil, all those guys talking trash. That should actually be a decent sport fix. The golf stuff yesterday was okay, but you put Tiger on TV, I think that'll be kind of a fun ordeal for next Sunday, my friend.
Now, is that like live golf too?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. The way you described it is like, wait, am I missing it? Are they having a forum or what? Yeah, I got you. They're going to be live mic playing golf together.
Yeah, and hopefully it's the unedited version too, kind of like the Jordan documentary. There can be a little bit of swearing because, I know those guys like to talk a little trash, and I'm sure Brady and Manning will. So hopefully he can let off a couple of F-bombs and whatnot, and I'm sure they'll make side bets. But yes, it does not, unfortunately, replace a really good 10 hours. You know, I'd always heard at the start, obviously I was wrong about this, but I'd heard from the start it was going to be 20 hours. So it would have been, another half to go. And obviously that would have milked it out a little bit. But we've also had days, though, where we've sat through an episode and you're like, man, we didn't hit on this. So 20 would have been like, holy cow. Maybe could have been 12. Like I feel, last night, I wanted to see a little more actual game footage just because they did such a phenomenal job of building up like how crazy the Jazz fans are and how crazy the Pacers are. Mm-hmm. So, and why not spend? So yeah, I'll be selfish and say it would have been nice to have another hour last night, or just simply had last night be two-hour episodes. Cause we got this incredible tease of this is how good the Pacers were.
Right.
Reggie breaking down, dude, this was my chance to knock down Jordan. And like, it was so close. So they give you the first couple of games. And then for games 5 and 6, they don't even show them.
Yeah. Like, and then 40 minutes later, they come back and document. By the way, let's jump in. It's game 6 is tied 3-3. You're like, your game 7. You're like, what? Wait, what? Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, and you can't drag it out forever, but it would have been cool to have an extra, even just an hour, maybe had last night be 3 hours long. So you could have dove into the Pacers, forcing them to the grind. And I loved it. And again, obviously this is where we're starting today, just to wrap up what was a great documentary. I never knew about the,
well, we're actually not starting there. Let's stay on the format.
Okay. All right, you're right.
But, yeah. We've done this in the last couple
of
shows.
It's a tease for later. But yeah, so it was fun. Be ready to watch Tiger and Phil next week, and it's free as well. So that'll be in 2 Sundays from now, brother. Then we're looking at NASCAR and horse racing.
Yeah, I mean UFC obviously is available. Like you said, golf, NASCAR. June 9th, I believe, is the first date for boxing on ESPN to come back. But they're going to be hot and heavy once June and July hits, dude. It's going to be like 2 to 3 ESPN, at least 2 a week for boxing events. And some of them are going to be midweek because, if you don't have to worry about selling out a crowd or anything, it doesn't matter when they are, then you can do them on a Tuesday. You know what I mean? So that'd be interesting. But yeah, totally, dude. It's, well, and originally, as we know, this is supposed to be in June, so this is going to be like, ABC was going to have a finals game, and then during the finals game, they were going to advertise it, and then the next day at night, they'd have these episodes, and then the next game, and then, so they could just sit there and pimp it out, market it like crazy, and it would have done even bigger ratings than it would have, because I think it was going to be on ESPN and ABC. A combination of both, but either way, yeah, I'm so glad that they bumped it up. I mean, that obviously gives you context, something to think about and all that. But there was that call that we talked about last week. And there was a, Superstar United front that came together with a variety of the top players, whether it's James or Durant or Curry or Lillard or Westbrook or whatever, they kind of are helping to influence, let's say, whether the league's going to start or not, or if they're on board. There was like a poll that went around a little bit asking players in general. This is kind of a reported poll or whatever. And it's funny, most of the people that weren't going to make the playoffs don't want the season back, you know, but the ones that were, I don't know. And then some of the people that weren't going to make the playoffs are still like, well, if we play a little bit of the regular season, maybe I can make a little bit more money. And then, you know, so there's kind of in between the thought process of that. Like I said, there are plenty of teams. We talked about Steve Kerr even talking, mentioning it, how, you know, he's assuming that the playoff or the non-playoff teams aren't even going to be involved. Like, there's no point in it. And then that also decreases the risk as well, you know, if you only have 16 teams or whatever. So Adam Silver did, you know, like he had that call and everything. He did say he has 2 to 4 weeks. This is about 5 days ago. Now that we're looking at this, he has about 2 to 4 weeks to decide if it's going to come back. The commissioner, you know, Adam Silver said that. He told the Board of Governors that, you know, his timetable is about 2 to 4 weeks. So let's say, you know, week to 3 weeks now. He did say the late to mid-June timetable is the first one that they actually put out. And that, you know, there's a variety of stuff, whether it's ramping up the test, a bunch of stuff that we've mentioned already kind of on this. But it'll be interesting to see if it comes back, of course. But also, there is a fair amount of maneuvering they're going to have to do because of the pay cuts. You know, they're definitely going to have to take some pay cuts in this. So that was another one that kind of stood out to me. I think he'll wait until early June to call it. But once it get past that, you know, I don't know. I'm still kind of in between on that. But as far as the stats go, before I go to you, the NBA team straight up will withhold more than $30 million from player checks. They talked about that on Friday as players receive their first salary reduction since the league and union agreed to the plan to temporary cut 25% of it. Six of the top 10 NBA earners, because they've already been paid for the full season, will get there. And this is LeBron, Wall, Curry, Blake, Griffin, Durant, and Paul George. They've already been paid. Some of them, because of who they're with. LeBron James, dude, that's for sure. I can't remember his damn name all of a sudden, but that guy. But also, those guys are going to, though. A lot of people are like, oh, so these guys don't have to take a pay cut? No, they're going to take it in 2021. So that'll be like the beginning of their, you know, obviously we don't know when that season's going to start, but they're all going to do that. Now, here's a couple of things. So if the league cancels the remainder of the regular season and jumps right into the playoffs, the players likely see a 25% pay reduction, but it increases as high, not for sure 40%, but as high as 40% if the league cancels the entire season, including the postseason. Players are projected to lose more than $1 billion of salary if there is no playoffs, although teams were notified April 17th of a memo, yada, yada, yada. A lot of teams haven't been talking necessarily about, you know, more than – I'm sure they've been trying to keep the information in general. After the next round of salaries withheld, the total amount – per team will range from about $2.8 million from Portland and $1.4 for the Lakers. That's probably because the Lakers have a couple more dudes on those one-year salaries, so their salary isn't as big. So, I mean, that's a lot, 25% straight up. And, I mean, if they don't have the playoffs, to lose $1 billion in salary, dude, that is no joke. It makes you think, well, there's just no way. Because the league's losing money at that point, too.
Yeah, and, I mean, I don't think that Silver really does care about a lot of media pressure, because I think he's done a great job just kind of going at this whole thing at his own pace. But I do think from day one, he's always said we want to have a season. The players want to. I'd be really, really surprised if he did cancel the whole thing. I don't think we will have a situation where we won't have anything. I mean, even though it's a really small step, even having golf and NASCAR back, it's kind of a step in the right direction of fans. Like, okay, like we're kind of coming back to reality. Obviously, our president is wanting things to go back to normal like immediately. So I do think that the smaller parts of society in different areas which are coming back to normal is a little bit of a forced hand. Again, I don't think he'd make a dumb decision, but I'd be really surprised if he just for some reason said, we're going to cancel the season now and then move on for next year. You know, I mean, it leaves right. that. And I think the main reason about it is just because it leaves that emptiness of, well, who the hell is the champion this year? You know?
Yeah.
And I think that means more to Silver and the players more so than money. Oh, maybe not to the players because, hell, they want the paycheck. But I think that obviously we have the health conditions, we have our reasons, but can you be the commissioner and have a year where there was not a crown champion? Which was in which we had a year where there was, you know, a lot of great athletes or rising stars or, you know, the LeBron and Antetokounmpo and like everything was, you know, this was a pretty good season for the NBA from a media standpoint, basketball standpoint, competitiveness standpoint, which we've not seen this much overall competitiveness in the league for a while. So there's so many positives. It would be shitty for, hey, there's an asterisk for the 2020 NBA season. So I think that's the overall answer, Chris, as to why I don't think he'll say no. Again, I think that he might end up reducing the amount of playoff time just to maybe try to get the season in and advance forward, or maybe they will do a best out of seven. If that's the case, hell, we're going to have a spoiled fall with pretty much all the sports kind of going together at once. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think he'll do what he has to do. And as I said last show, the impossible question to answer is how do we react to health if players get yeah. sick? And I just don't think there is an answer for it. So I think Silver is also going to say, guys, if we get sick, let's handle it the best we can. Hopefully a team doesn't get hammered with this corona bug. Hopefully a player doesn't get his mom sick. And then, you know, like Carl Anthony Towns, you know, if a mother passes away, you know, I think that's an unfortunate risk, which they'll try to prevent, but they have to take just in general. Just because, I'm not trying to sound like a ruthless person, but I just think that's something where this is a league. We're going to try to be safe. Hopefully nothing bad happens. If it does, hopefully the issues that come from it aren't that bad, Chris. I think that's a kind of a brutal thing to look at, but also probably a realistic look they're going to take. You know, the NFL, I don't think they're going to care as much as sure as it is in the media as the NBA does. But I think the NBA is going to do it right, and I hope we get basketball in a couple of months.
Yeah, and even like Gavin Newsom, who some people were saying, oh, the L.A. is going to be shut down, California is going to be shut down for 3 months and whatnot. Newsom actually announced that the first week of June, sports can return without fans. So that's yeah. another, you know, that liberal state and whatnot, huge economy and stuff like that. So that plays into it a little bit based off that. And I think you're right. It does help that there's only 15 guys on the squad. That really does help. The UFC, actually, some dude dropped out the week of because he had COVID. Sure. Two other people tested for COVID that were on the undercards after. So, I mean, it's going to happen. Like you said, I suppose the people that, even though you're an athlete, if you have asthma or if you do have an underlining, you know, concern or issue in your body, you know, I'm sure those players are going to be a little bit more worried about it because it's like, hey, dude, this can actually affect me and kill me. Like, not, I might be 31, but if you have an underlying, you know, issue, it can actually kill you. Whereas it could just be a horrible, the worst flu you're ever going to get for some people. And you can have it and it doesn't affect you that much. You get a little sniffles, you get a cough, who knows. But the things are, you know, pointing that direction, no doubt about it. Anything else that you have on this topic before we get into the last dance? I do want to make sure. Anything else, though?
The only thing, again, and we'll hit this point in case you didn't listen to our last few shows. the only reason to really push for the league to finish out the regular season is for the TV perspective. Yeah. So, you know, down here living in Texas, I believe the NBA would owe the FS North Dallas Mavericks station a certain amount of money, because I believe you have to cover 70 Mavericks games to earn your full check for the TV rights. So if the NBA does bring it back into playoffs, which they probably would, the NBA would have to cut out checks to the local TV branches. But again, realistically, that's something that the NBA can afford to do. They probably won't like it, sure, to write out 30 checks. But financially, that's something that, hell, they can dip a little bit into their bank and pull it off, Chris.
Yeah, exactly. And we talked about how it's almost 40%. The revenue as far as for live sports, too. And baseball's right about that, too. And especially places and small markets, smaller markets like St. Louis, they the Cardinals tickets, they act because it's such a big team and popular team in the area and across the country, but especially in that area, they really actually, you know, depend on that a little bit more. Another thing, real quick, the minor leagues, this is going to be in huge problems in baseball if they can't have fans. Because talk about relying on your fan base. That's exactly what those small-time towns do in the summer. Oh, you got nothing to do? Go check out a minor league game. So that'll be interesting. So to set the last tone, the last dance, 9-8, here's a story with the Ahmad Rashad, who there really hasn't been too many more reporters in the NBA that haven't, you know, been able to dig as deep in with these guys. And obviously he was trustworthy because, you know, he wasn't leaking a bunch of stuff. Now, when he's done and stuff, he's actually leaked more stuff than he did back then. But here is a story about Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, and also Charles Barkley and Ewing. This is a story about them talking about basically who's the best
right now.
So here it is. Here's Ahmad Rashad.
So we are sitting in a room in a hotel in Barcelona. Patrick Ewing.
Dream team. Barkley,
Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson. And there is a conversation going on who had the best team. Now, Larry Bird makes Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley stop talking totally because they never won a championship. So the conversation is between Boston, the Lakers, and Chicago.
And I just love how Larry's like, all right, before we get into this, Ewing, Barkley, you're out.
It moves forward on to who's the best individual player. Now, Michael and Magic got into it. They were talking back and forth with each other, and it was really funny. And just, I was sitting over there with Larry Bird, and we were just watching. And finally, Michael gets very upset and says, listen, all I'm telling you, Larry, and I'm telling you, Magic, if you don't quit, every time I see you next year, I am busting your ass. When I come to your arena, I'm busting your ass. So I'm warning you right now, you better quit. And so after time went by, Larry Bird finally just looks over at Magic and he says, Magic, you know, you and I were then, and Michael Jordan is now.
So that's a nice little way to start out those guys. I do love how they allowed cursing and just a lot. I don't know. I kind of like that little detailed stuff. Yeah, sure. We've had some complaints, especially me, about certain things that aren't really objective in this thing. But for what it is, the behind-the-scenes little chatter, and also the layers of stuff outside of the documentary that it's, like, content-wise. Obviously, we've had content of it, too. But just the little layers you get from these conversations that you never heard before and stuff like that. So it's just it's a fun way to start. You know, the show and just, you know, the documentary itself, like I said, I've had some issues with it because when I hear the word documentary, that does have a journalistic, you know, ethics to it, to an extent, ethics. But in the same breath, if this is the only way they could make this thing happen and it's 10 episodes and there's a lot of new footage and there's a lot of stuff you found out, just minor details that you wouldn't have otherwise. So I'm not totally complaining about it, but I'm just being honest. But overall, this was just great. This was phenomenal to watch all this time. And let's just catch up into episode 9, February 93. Like you said, they set up all this stuff. They set it up from the last episode, actually, right? Because remember, I thought the last 4 minutes was going to be the Pacers series last week, and I was going to blow up. Like, are you, this team took them to game 7, and this is what you're going to say? But that was cool. I like how they teased you last week. Then they teased you early, and they showed that 93 clip of Reggie Miller when he bumped in and kind of gave a little extra oomph to MJ, and MJ went back at him. And I remember watching that game, and MJ attacked him and all that. And also, just kind of lining up that series of how the rivalry had started. You see Jordan bouncing the ball off Mark Jackson's head in frustration. So I did like that. He talked about the Black Jesus. Don't mess with the Black Jesus. After as a rookie, Reggie Miller said something to him in one, half or something like that. So that was kind of fun when they bounced that back. It was also kind of cool to see Bird as the coach. You know, people forget he wasn't just the GM, back. A lot of people think of him the GM now, of course, but that first chunk of years that he was with Indiana, it was as a, as a coach. So they kind of flash back to 97 and 98, a little bit in the past beyond that in these two episodes, but kind of goes along, and you're talking about, Magic, or not Magic, but MJ Jordan saying that was our second-to-toughest opponent coming out of the East behind Detroit, which I definitely think it was. And the Bulls get up 2-0. Game 2, Jordan went for 41 points. It's not looking good at this point. Reggie Miller did do really well in Game 3, and it was 2-1. And then, Game 4, you had MJ Miller, the inbound pass miscue, and this is kind of a flashback. They're kind of going back and forth with this stuff, but Pippen misses a free throw. Two free throws, actually, with not a whole lot of time left at all. And, Miller hits that, bangs that three. It's 2-2. Michael Jordan had that ball or that shot, like a turnaround three that rimmed out coming off the glass. I think it was maybe under a second left in that game. Then they flash back to June 97. And like you said, it's kind of like so – they hyped up this Indiana Pacers stuff, and then they kind of left it alone, for a while.
Yeah, and I wish they would have kind of just finished, or I should say, I wish they would have done an extra hour. Because we got all the hype for the Pacers and how great of a series it was, and you had Reggie Miller and Mark Jackson, Jalen Rose, and Rick Smith. They had a legit team. And a crazy ass fan base. I mean, we've always talked about how college basketball arenas are more fun than pro. Indiana's always been one of those ones where it's like, those people are pretty crazy. Like, that's a college type arena. So it would have been nice to have an extra, just an extra hour for episode 9, where you could have really dug into the Pacers series more and both parts of the Jazz. Because obviously, I get the last episode you had to wrap it up. I'll save it for later. But it would have been nice to see footage of Game 5 versus the Pacers and Game 6, and maybe spend a little time more on Game 7. Like, I never knew, and I'm a diehard sports fan, I never knew about the lost jump ball that Rick Smith taps the wrong guy, and the Pacers, the two guys ran to Jordan. And they're like, oh, shit, that means Kerr's open, and he hits a three. Like, that was a moment where even listening to Bulls players and Pacers players and a couple other podcasts, like, that was a moment in the game where the Pacers felt if they had won that tip and scored, they could have won the game. So you had a huge play in Game 7 where you could have maybe interviewed a couple more players or gotten more of a perspective. So why not milk it out a little bit more? And I get the fact that during this whole podcast, you'd mix in game footage, player perspective, flashbacks, which was marvelous. I'm being selfish and saying, why not spend an extra extra half an hour just on the game? Because again, and you've been telling me this whole time, like, Jordan's not a guy who's going to be, you know, showing, he likes to maybe sugarcoat any moment of weakness he has or something to that effect. But
right.
He did say, dude, the Pacers were real. So if that's his way of kind of being even kind of honest, like, shit, it show that a little bit more, you know. But yeah, so
especially being two up in the series and having them come back on you,
yeah,
that had to mess with you mentally a little bit. And we've talked about on our show for the NBA playoff banter, you know, when you are on that third year of the repeats, that three-peat you're going for, how, you know, mentally and physically taxing it could be. And you didn't get that feeling until the end of the documentary. You kept saying it then, you know.
Yeah, and again, it's and we'll get to this, but speaking of the Warriors, I know that that's something they've talked about, where they busted their ass so hard that year to beat the Bulls record and win 73 games, but then Steph and Clay and Dre, they said they were worn out, like they were mentally fatigued for that year. And the other perspective that I think sometimes sport fans forget, or people who don't watch sports forget, is the fact that, think of all the damn games where Jordan and Pippen and all these guys were playing that regular teams don't. You know, I get it's part of the grind, and that's why I truly think hockey is even crazier, because those guys, whatever, a different debate. But the playoff grind for any sport, you're adding on so much extra hours to your body, and that's why you really don't ever see too often of teams that really do repeat. You know, and Jordan, you know, he was tired as hell after winning the first repeat. He was tired last night after winning again. It really is that extra amount of work, which, you know, the team who gets the offseason, Chris, gets to enjoy a little bit more, and that maybe they're a little bit fresher. You know, again, I get that these guys want to compete, but as you're saying, yeah, the Bulls, they just never had that slip up, which was one of the most maybe fun things about the documentary. I mean, besides the fact
once they started winning, right?
Sure, yeah. But they never had the. I mean, there was so many moments in that documentary where they would zoom in and they'd say, oh, well, the game's tied, or the Bulls are down three. And then the last minute, it's like, boom, boom, boom. Nope, they didn't lose. You know, if you were a kid who never watched the Bulls and you watch this documentary, not knowing that they had won every single championship when Jordan was there for the full year, you would have probably have wondered, hey, like, they're going to lose one. Like, if you gave this to just a completely anonymous sports fan and blocked right out the fact that there was any previews for the future, you'd be like, well, shit. Okay, he's won three. He came back. Now he won three more. Holy cow. You know, so it was such a joy. And
the first time I felt that was that series, going into the series in general, but once they got tied up, I did start to feel that with the Pacers. I was like, wow, dude. And then when they got up 3-2, I was like, okay, they're going to – nope, it's 3 – oh, wow, dude. And in that game itself, what were you going to say, though? Let's keep moving the pace, though, a little bit.
Sure, yeah. Well, and just to kind of wrap up the Indiana thoughts, obviously it was very fun and competitive, and it just reminded me of how freaking good Reggie Miller was. Jesus Christ, that dude was so good. So, yeah, that was fun. And then we'll get to the
they had a damn good deep team, man. I mean, it was damn good. Now, as far as so it was sitting at 2-2, then they went away from the series in the documentary. Then we would flash back to June 97 and the game one stuff. You know, MJ at the buzzer. You know, MJ was pissed because Malone got the MVP, but you're not going to win the MVP 10 straight times. And you know what we used to say back then? They're just leasing it out for a year. It'll come back. You know what I mean? Like, it just – you got to give it to somebody else. But he was all – he, of course, pissed off at that. Really pissed off at that. But they showed, you know, Stockton and Malone, and they showed Stockton hitting that game winner against Houston. And I remember that definitely. Then they went to game two of that same series. Bulls easily win. Malone, so game one, game two, then Malone went for like 37 points, went off. And pretty soon, you know, before you know it, it was 2-2 in that 97 series with Utah. And I know it's kind of confusing. That's why I'm trying to use the dates, because I'm just going off how the episode went. Then the flu game came up. And you know what? As it turns out, It was actually a pizza, food poisoning. Now, because I work at a bar and a restaurant, I have had some training when it comes to food poisoning. And sometimes it could take up to 24 hours. Sometimes it could be less. I've ate something at like 10 or 10:30 at night and then woke up out of sleep at like 8 in the morning and woke up and puked. So I can relate to that. The 3 or 4 hours after you eat it, puking already, that's not as common. So maybe he actually did have the flu too, or a little sick, and it was a combination. But here's the thing. No, we all know he went for, you know, 38 points and went off after throwing up. He was in an IV, which, you know, IV, it's funny because, like, in a sport like boxing, you can't take an IV. You can't take one before the fight because of the HGH and all that stuff potential that you can be doing. But you can't – you actually can't even do it, but for all other sports, you can, which always kind of throws me off a little bit. But he's sitting there pumping an IV before the damn game. But here's the thing, though. So they said he ordered a pizza. Everyone was paranoid, so paranoid when it came, and just in general, not thinking it's a good idea. But my thing is, if you were a handler, right, like an assistant, which this guy was that was talking about it, they say 4 or 5 pizza guys came, delivery guys came to the door. So that's weird. So you gave them Michael Jordan's room number? Or did they think, well, we know the Bulls are staying there, so there's a potential that we could meet Jordan. So why not come 4 or 5 deep? So I get that idea of it, but if you're his personal hander, why don't you just do it at your, you know, residence? Or say deliver it right to the front and meet him at the front. Or I was a little confused of how that all went. So you let them know it was for Jordan, or you just figured, well, it's in that place where they always stay, so just in case it's Jordan. Well, what'd you think of the whole food poisoning angle? And it is kind of crazy that they've waited this long to say now it's not a flu.
Yeah. Well, first off, I don't. There's probably like only a few people I count on one hand that would wish to get food poisoning. there's some people I've never been fans of in my life. Yeah. But I remember working at Applebee's in Alaska once, and I had a ribeye. And like you, it was probably around 10:30 at night. And I actually woke up. I remember, hell, this was like 10 years ago. I remember I was supposed to have like a hockey draft with my friends. And I woke up and I was like, I didn't drink last night. Why do I feel hungover? And needless to say, I think after about the first pick, I missed the hockey draft, and it was about 6 hours of hell. So yes, the food poisoning, that's a bitch. And the fact he went out and played like he did. But that whole story didn't quite make sense. Again, maybe the front desk person tipped them off about Jordan being there. But again, if you're ordering pizza, and I'm sure his friend didn't say, hey, this pizza's for Michael Jordan, the right, place for the Bulls.
You know, can you bring it to me? A little elbow grease in
there,
you know?
And even those guys said, hell, we weren't going to eat that thing. Like, we were nervous. So if Jordan's guys right. And, like, his best friend and his trainer were like, we're not touching it, and Jordan's like, I'm hungry as hell, I need food. Like, it doesn't quite add up that 5 guys drop off a pizza. So there must have been some type of tip that they ordered the pizza and the front desk called the hotel, and of course there's Jazz people, and of course, you know, they probably put something in that pizza that you don't get food poisoning normally, so they even tried to rig the shit for him to help out the Jazz, and it still didn't work. But yes, that whole thing is really weird. Someone must have given some type of tip, and even with him being sick in some way, shape, or form, it still wasn't enough, which right. speaks volumes to the guy. But yeah, I didn't quite get that, Chris. But obviously he goes there, you know, he guts it out. And he even said it to kind of show the competitor that he was in the first half of that game. It showed him missing about 4 to 5 jumpers in a row. It showed him his legs were tired. I'm guessing for that game itself, obviously maybe the halftime was really needed. You know, that gives you a good,
yeah,
probably 15-minute break to
fluids in,
you know, pump in Gatorade fluids, IV, whatever you want to do. So, but just he did his thing, and he stepped up and hit the shots he had to. I did think there was a little bit of a hidden underline, which obviously, you know, and people are polarized about this guy for better or worse, about Rodman. And I really thought the last two episodes, which you say what you want about the guy, and he's crazy. Maybe you shouldn't talk about politics. Maybe you shouldn't go to North Korea, whatever. That dude was huge for them. And again, he didn't even need to score. But
yeah, I didn't like how that inside, I think it was Inside Edition, or no, I can't remember what that show was, but she's like, well, I mean, honestly, like, he didn't score ever, so he was really just good for defense. And then you see that game, you're like, oh, is that, that's it then? That's just defense and rebounding when you're playing Karl Malone and you're in the finals? I think you need him as a Hall of Fame player.
And actually, to rewind just a second, it gave him props in the Indiana series. It said he would go against the Davis brothers, and he went against Karl Malone. He was showing, like, you know, out-rebounding Malone in key games. I know that we'll get to this for the 98 one, but, I mean, the rebounding effort from Rodman was just insane. And it did give you enough points for, like, dude, yeah, Malone was a hell of a score, one of the best scorers of all time. And Rodman was in his grill. So we always love to give Jordan and Pippen credit, which they deserve, and the role players. But the Rodman love for that series, especially of being that tough-ass dude, because, you know, it seemed that every other series of importance, Jordan was, you know, dealing with something, or Pippen was hurt. But Rodman, the dude might take some days off, but, hell, he was always grinding, Chris. And that really is that piece that they needed. And, again, your stat line ain't going to be sexy, but 15 rebounds when you're going up against people, right, is a hell of a player to have on your squad.
Definitely. So then they went on that Steve Kerr segment to kind of relate. Both of them lost their fathers, and also relate the shot that he hit with 5 seconds left. And Pippen stilled the ball. They wrapped up that series. And Kerr had been struggling that whole series. I do remember that. That was always so nice. It was fun to see that line that I always liked. And I loved when I heard it live back in the day when he, you know, well, we were in the huddle and, you know, I they asked Jordan, and Jordan said, you know, I'm just not comfortable in these situations. And, well, I guess it's up to me to bail out, you know, MJ again. So I like that little part. That was pretty fun. And then they flashed. Yeah. And then they flashed right to, you know, a 3-3 game 7 versus Indiana, which was a little funky. They did have Gus, his friend in security, that came back, that was having some problems with cancer, so that was pretty cool. Pacers got out to an early lead. They kind of climbed back into it, tied it up 28-28 to the Bulls, and then the Bulls actually went on this long run. They got up healthily, and then the Pacers went on an 11-0 run and tied it with a little under 10 left, 69-69. That jump ball, they were up by 3 points that you mentioned earlier. I hear that, and that's a feeling you can have, but there was 6 minutes and 39 seconds left in the game. So if you would have got up by five, as we know watching basketball, it comes down, as long as you're within like 5 to 8 points in the last 5 minutes, you're going to be okay. So that, I thought that was a little overdone, although I can see how, I like how they said it, and they felt that way. But feeling in the reality of it, we have no clue, because you got 6 minutes left. You're only up by five. But either way, it was a nice I like how they break down those little moments just, you know, in your head, as far as what people are saying to each other and thinking in their head. A lot of times you can't admit it. And it's funny, MJ, the only time they showed his weakness, right, was in a game that he ended up being the hero in. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like Bruce Willis. The only time he died in a movie is when he saved the world or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's still kind of funny how, like, oh, you're going to show your weakness and you're tired and you're human. You know, in this game, the game that you scored 38 points in. So that was pretty funny. But I love the detail, no doubt about it. And then you had him saying, like, well, you know, then they said, you know, then they won that game. So that was over. It was kind of weird, though. Like, what did Larry Bird, like, whisper something to MJ? Because at the end of that, Larry comes in and he says, you bitch, you fuck you, to him. And it was kind of like, did he just whisper something in your ear? Or, God, that, wow, okay. He's just calling him a bitch and saying, and fuck off after Bird was coming into his place to say, hey, good game. But they had that back and forth, and Bird always was cussing back and forth. So I could see him maybe whispering something that the camera didn't pick or the mic didn't pick up. Because, you know, you could barely actually hear MJ's part, but he was mic'd, so that helped. But they showed the print. That's how we figured it out. But I wonder what Larry said to him. But it was fun to hear. I remember this comment back in the day, too, or this saying, put him away, MJ. Put him away, MJ. And that was a big thing. I mean, he was saying that. Because now this year, in 98, 97, Utah had the home court. Game one, overtime, 88-85, Utah won. The Bulls won. Game two, it's 1-1. Game three was just a dominant performance. It was like, I think it still holds. Maybe not. Maybe Detroit beat them defensively. But 96-54. 54 was the lowest output ever at that time. So it did feel like it was on. But obviously, Rodman was feeling so good about that win and that defense, that 54 number, that he went to the WWE instead of turning up to practice, or the WCW, I think, technically. So Rodman's over there, and that's when that lady got that cheap shot in, like, well, they didn't really need him, you know. It's like, oh, they didn't? Oh, okay, sure. But he was very dominant after that, too. But I did like how they broke down, just to kind of get further in the series, how Pippen did hurt himself earlier in that season. I think game five, actually, I think game three after that. I think that's when it was. And it kind of felt like, okay, no big deal. You know, Rodman comes back and rebounds the shit out of the thing. They're up 3-1. You're like, here we go. Game five, Malone delivered the mail like he normally does. MJ missed a turn. That was the turnaround shot there with 1.1 seconds left. 83-81. Back to Utah it goes. Game six, though, Pippen is like, he leaves early in the game. They show that stat where 20 different Hall of Famers, were Jordan and the Bulls in general, through their run. In the playoffs, all time, the Bulls and Jordan teams, 20 different Hall of Famers. It shows you how much talent was back then, too. And some of the teams that, you know, got him out, look at the teams that were on those. I mean, the Detroit and Boston, some of those. That one team that he went off on, they had 5 Hall of Famers on one team. And people are like, oh, the players, they leave so much nowadays. It's like, well, where's MJ, Bird, and Magic going to go? Magic got drafted to a team that had, what's his name? Oh, yeah, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And then they added James Worthy, another Hall of Famer. You know, it's funny. Larry Bird had, you know, at least 2 Hall of Famers at his team at all times. That one year had 5. So it's like, well, it's a different time right now. But I did like how they broke down Pippen getting hurt, getting some, you know, ice and heat and drugs, coming back, doing something, being a decoy, but also rebounding, or you could see when he rebounded walking down, you could see his back was in bad shape. You have Malone and Rodman doing battle. 66 Utah up, 66-61 at the end of the third quarter. And like you said, you know, you could see him missing shots. MJ, Pippen would go out, then he'd come back in. I mean, with a couple, like, I think it was like 8 minutes to go, they showed that Pippen was still being effective, but man, he was really, really hurt. 8 minutes left, 77-74. The game was just back and forth, back and forth. Stockton gets a nice bucket, 86-83, 41 seconds left. And this is what you're talking about, too. Okay, so the game is tight. Everything was tight. Everything's there. And then MJ got a layup and ended up, you know, 86-85. And then, of course, you know, there's a steal. The coming from the weak side on Malone, it did look like he was going to clear, and then he hung around and he stole it. That was a huge play by Jordan right there. And also Pippen to be around in there, you know, for him. And then they went on the last shot. And, you know, clearly it's a push off, but we know, and this is the only problem I had about this documentary, to call it a documentary and not document it with that journalistic feature to it, I was a little – I didn't like how they said, oh, dude, the whole point like it didn't even exist. Like he made a, like he patted him on his butt and that's it. The funny thing to me is when people say he was already running that way. And I know what you mean by that on the surface. Yeah, he was going that way. He probably was already faked out, and that's cool. But the debate, or not the debate, but the reply to say that's my excuse of why that's not a foul. Well, he was already going that way. Well, which way was he supposed to go? I mean, if Jordan's going to our right, then he's probably going to follow him. He's not going to go the opposite direction. So it's okay to think Michael Jordan's the best player ever to play, right? And in that same breath, say that that was a push. It's okay to have both of those. It's also, if I say it was a push, because it clearly was, it's not like I'm saying he would have got his shit blocked if it wasn't for that, you know, the push, because that's not true. I think the part of it that people didn't talk about in this documentary is, and I saw some people on Twitter talking about it, Russell had started to time MJ in his spots minorly. That's not to say he shut down anybody. You don't really shut down Jordan for more than a couple games, and he's back at you, and he wins a series. So, just like Gary Payton, two out of those three games. But Russell was actually – and the biggest one was when he tried to post up and he'd do his fadeaway. Russell started beating him or timing him to his spot, his comfort spots, and jumping out on him and doing a pretty decent job on that, you know? So I think that was Jordan's way of, I'm going to get this shot off clean as hell. And, of course, he hit it. But, you know, to say, like, well, there was no ref, like two different people said that. I think Isaiah Live said that. Well, the ref was blinded. But the ref was right there, actually. Like, if you're looking at it from the back view, which we did, Jordan's going right. In the left corner where they started, not in the corner, but in the left area there, the fucking ref's looking right at it. So to sit there and say the ref wouldn't have seen it, that's just not true. There's a ref right there. The point is, he was just clearing some space to make sure that he got it. And I wish they would have just said, how many times do we see a no call for minor contact in a game at the end of a game? We see that all the time. And then add in the level that it's a star, especially as bright as Jordan. I wish they would have just put something behind it. But when you got like Bob Costas saying, well, at a fancy restaurant, that's like, you know, tucking your chair in for the guest. Dude, come on, dude. In the hole, he was running that way. Dog, what way was he supposed to run? He was running the way the ball went. Like, I'm not saying he didn't block the shot, but to me, that was a little weak because it's clearly a push-off, and I'm okay with it going down as a legendary shot in the best player of all time's, you know, thing. It's really not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe, just to kind of take that shot, how many shots he hit. Like, I saw a statistic today on ESPN. They tweeted out, I think, that of, like, of percentages of shots hit by players, like, game-winning shot, like, percentages in, like, end-of-playoff games. And Jordan's percentage was 50%. And I could pull up, I mean, but then you had guys like Harden and Westbrook who were, like, 8 and 9%. You know, so the fact that you can say that, you know, you cherry picked all the moments out of this documentary for him, but the fact that almost every damn game he hit the shot is just amazing. It's kind of like the Tiger Woods putts at majors, but and I think in that same statistic of clutch shots when, you know, in playoff games, LeBron was like around like 27, which is a good respectable percentage, but Jordan was at 50. And
well, it's all reason, about the timing with that stat, too, because there's a 24 seconds left, 20 seconds left. There's a 10 second and a 5 second. It matters which one you go on that one, to be honest with you, because if you look at from 2001 on, LeBron's leading the pack. So it's a weird stat. But it, like you said, it shows that Jordan either had the ball or was going to, you know, take the shot or pass it to a completely wide open guy. Point is, he made the plays when it counted.
Okay, so it says Jordan versus the MVPs of last 20 seasons for a game tying or go ahead shot in the final 24 seconds of their playoff careers. And Jordan hit it 50%. Dirk was 39 and LeBron was 37. Harden and Westbrook round off at 10-8. So if there was 24 seconds or less in a game, and it was a playoff game, and it was a go-ahead or tying shot, the dude hit a 50% clip, which no one else is up there. And it's kind of actually funny you put Harden and Westbrook up there, who I bet a lot of people nowadays in the younger generation would say, oh, yeah, man, think of all the shots Harden's hit. Well, he's 42% behind Jordan. So it's just I think one of my biggest –
Part of that stat, though, is you do have a damn good team every time you're hitting that stuff, though, too. You know, meaning you got a one-on-one look is what I'm saying. Yeah, I'll show you another stat, too.
But part of it also is the fact that of all the people on that list, not all of them had the balls to want to do that either. Like, that, you know, there's – you want to talk – we've talked about people who have their playoff off moments. Harden's got a list of those. And a lot of those shots Harden missed has probably been – I'm going to dribble the top of the key for 10 seconds and hoist the three, you know. So right.
Look at the thing I just sent you, and this is what I mean by these stats. Here's another one. Potential go-ahead field free throw or field goals in a playoff final 24 seconds of fourth quarter or overtime since 2001. LeBron, 9 for 21. Kobe, 4 of 15. Durant, 4 of 13. It's kind of adding to what I'm telling you about Jordan as far as how impressive it is. Ginobili, who hit, it felt like he hit every big shot at the end of the games, right? Ginobili, a bunch of them. Boom, he only hit four of those. Pierce only hit four of those out of 12. Chauncey, Mr. Big Shot, 3 of 9. Duncan, 2 of 9. Harding, Curry, 0 of 9, 1 of 9. Westbrook is not even on the list. And this is just from 2001. So I'm not taking away from Jordan. I'm just saying this really shows you the layers of it. It really shows you the layers of that. Pretty interesting, man.
Yeah, and you know, of course, you knew that was going to be the last part of the show. I mean, that's probably the most probably his most famous shot. He had the Cleveland one. Yeah. He had other ones, but I mean, it's what most people know, the push off and the left elbow jumper, which, you know, and I had forgot that actually that the Jazz had a chance. That I had forgot the Jazz still had time on the clock. I mean, obviously, I was. You remember that time, and I remember the shot, but I'd forgot right. that there actually was time for them to get off the shot. But of course, the defensive intensity, I was listening to a pod today, and I found out the names that when the Bulls assistant coach, he called it like the Doberman defense when he put out Pippen, Jordan, Harper, and Rodman. They call it like the Doberman defense. And the one of the key things that I'd heard a couple times was the fact that trying to inbound plays against the Bulls when they had people on the court who were like their lockdown guys was really, really hard. I mean, we take for granted now, Chris, that if my Warriors call a timeout to get Curry off the last shot, or, you know, for the Greek Freak, Antetokounmpo, like Milwaukee's down two, what are they going to do? I would say if you ran that play 100 times in the NBA, I would say that probably 92% of the times that player gets the ball. They may not make it, but I would say about probably 90 to 92% of the times you're going to get the ball in. But with the defense, and you actually saw so many clips of that again, of how, hell, the Bulls made it was a bitch to inbound the pass.
Yeah, they like stole the ball in a couple of those series right at the end to close out the game.
I mean, they're going to score on you. They're going to fight you. Rodman's going to get the boards. And now it's also really hard to inbound the ball. Like, because, I mean, Utah, they had all the people they could to drop a damn play. I'm not sure if that was going to Stockton or Malone, but they didn't even get a shot off.
Man, oh, man. No, I mean, just that. And that kind of let's blend it into Golden State 2017, especially because they were really humming at that time. 2018, they were humming and they won, but. You know, there was some circumstances in there a little bit more, I'd say. I think the 2017 was a tad bit stronger. And some of it is that Houston series, you know, they showed it, they had adversity, but they overcame it. But they did overcome it without Chris Paul. So that plays into that. But that 2017 team against that team. And that's when I try to line these things up. I just don't. And like I thought the Kerr segment in this one was good. I thought, or great. I liked how they compared it with his pops and all that. But I did have a problem with Kerr being one of the guys on the four. You know, like, you're going to show four players of all time for the, you know, in that time, or four names, you know, Phil Jackson, Pippen, Jordan, and then Kerr's in the shot. And that always bugged me, because it's like, dog, Ron Harper was the starter. In fact, that year, even in that later part of his career at that age, he was 34 that year. He started all 82 games at point guard. He's the only guy that played 82 games that year. Oh, no, him and Jordan played 82 games that year. So Rodman was 80. He started like 66 of them. So that bugged me a little bit. But, dude, like you said, like, Pippen is one of the best all-time defensive guys for his position. And he could guard multiple positions, three positions at that time. Fucking Rodman's one of the best, if not the best defender ever, you know? And then you had Jordan, who was a hell of a defender, and Harper. Like, those four defensively, and then Harper's not a chump when it comes to scoring, you know? Either is Pippen. So, I mean, like you said, throw in whatever. It's all about matchups. You could put Luke Longley if they had a center. Cool. You could also go Kukoc because he's a swing man in a sense. So, but tell me how you see that just lining up those starting lineups. You know what I'm saying?
All right. I think that, okay, so obviously if we're playing like modern day now rules NBA, the Warriors are they're gonna score. I mean, so Curry's gonna get points off. They're probably gonna hack the shit out of him. They're gonna lock him down. But I don't think that you're gonna Curry's gonna get points. Klay Thompson, I would say, is more physical.
Curry's
and tough,
gonna
right?
probably get guarded by the toughest guys ever got guarded by, though. Let's put it that
yeah,
way.
So he's probably gonna be running around and having to struggle really hard to get off shots. He'll put up threes, but you're right, it won't be quite as smooth. I do think that a guy like Klay Thompson, who's a little more rugged than Curry, obviously, Klay would have to work hard. I do think that as good as they pass the ball, they would find ways to get shots off. I think Draymond is going to do all he can against Rodman. Hell, that's probably a guy that inspired him. They're very similar players. Obviously, Rodman's a better rebounder, but Draymond, I mean, when you think of Draymond Green, the way he plays is really what Rodman played like. Like, the get under your skin. Draymond's obviously a better scorer, but I'm going to try to piss off the other team. I'm going to fight an elbow and
hang
in there.
Better passer, too.
Yeah, much better passer and dribbler and shooter. But for defensive intensity, Rodman's got him beat, which, you know, not many people can say that about Draymond. So, and obviously Durant. I mean, if you put Jordan on him and Jordan started talking shit, that dude's going to get mentally checked out, because, I mean, I won't even go down there. But Durant's not the strongest mental guy.
It'd be Pippen and Durant is my guess.
That would be – I think Durant would – that would be hard on him. So, okay. So if we're playing nowadays, though, like, just the if I was to envision a series, I don't think that I don't think the Bulls would sweep them. I think obviously the Bulls are going to score. The Warriors are going to score. I think from Bulls' standpoint, the Warriors would have their hands full. I do think that if Andre Iguodala can guard LeBron respectively nowadays in the playoffs, he could do the same for Jordan. I'm not saying he's going to lock him down, but if we're kind of comparing times, if Iguodala could do a decent job against LeBron, yeah, it's not preposterous to say that Iguodala couldn't be respectful in Jordan. No one ever shut Jordan down, but hell, I don't think Iguodala would be a doormat. So
no,
you put Iggy on Jordan. You put Klay Thompson on Pippen. I don't know where you put Steph. I suppose Steph would be on like a Ron Harper, which
would post up Steph.
Yeah, Steph, and I think Curry would find his points, Chris, against them in some ways, but Curry's going to be massively exposed on the defensive end. I mean, that's something the Warriors have been able to hide over time just because of how good they are. Curry's always – he's not a complete trash defender, but he's probably like a C, C minus. So I think Curry would have his hands full. Klay Thompson would get tired as hell. Iguodala would get tired as hell. Rodman's going to probably give Draymond to get a couple of techs.
Well, they're both getting thrown out of the series.
Sure, you're right.
Talk about them, actually. Yeah. Well, actually, it matters, because if it was in the 90s, they both would be able to stay in the games. But if, nowadays, forget it, you know. Actually, Rodman wouldn't have been in the league. You know what I mean? They would have already kicked his ass out.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, overall, I think they'd score. I think Clay would find his way. Durant would find his way. So would Curry. But if I'm going to give compliments to the guys I love, Jordan's going to hit clutch threes. Pippen's going to be a massive issue. Curry's going to be exposed. And Draymond and Rodman are going to be going at it all day. So I think it would be kind of like a six-game series. I think the Warriors would probably win two at home, and I think the Bulls would obviously take over and win. I don't think it would be a sweep. I think on a given night, maybe Klay Thompson just goes off and hits 12 threes. You know, it's possible.
As long as nobody tweets anything after one of those games about Jordan, because then it'd be over the next game.
Oh,
that's another thing. Jordan on Twitter, he wouldn't have been able to have an account, because he would have been so touchy about that. He would have had 19 burner accounts. Like, he would have been like, I can't believe they're saying this stuff. But it's like, barely anybody said anything negative about him back then. Barely anybody. But yet he's like, oh, he said this. You know, he's making up shit about people just to rile his ass up. I love that about that competitive nature.
Yeah. So I love the Warriors.
It's a hell of a game.
They brought me a lot of joy. It'd be a fun series, but I would feel very homerish, and I'm not even going to say it. I don't think the Warriors could win the series. Obviously, injuries happen. You never know. But unless Jordan got hurt, like, there's as offensively gifted as the Warriors are, the Bulls were just as good and would have provided difficult matchups for us defensively. So again, if Iguodala and Clay get worn out guarding Pippen and Jordan, that takes away from their offensive production, and we would just run out of juice. But it would be fun to watch. Now, if we went back in the day, I do think that, hell, if you're going to foul Curry and Clay 30 times a game, they're going to make free throws. Actually, hell, they're not going to call fouls back then. Back in the day, we'd really struggle, because Curry would be getting his ass whooped, and Draymond would want to fight Rodman. And Clay and Iguodala would be okay, but it would take away from how the Warriors play, of the flow and run the court, hit threes. The Bulls would just lock us down and beat the shit out of us. They would probably win that series 4-0.
Yeah, and you know, even the whole MJ LeBron thing, when you think about it, it's like, well, we could say MJ's the best right now, but we do have to let LeBron finish his career. You know what I mean? A lot of people just look at it like as if they don't count the first 6 years, especially those last couple against Detroit, as losses to teams. They only look at them once they got in the finals. They never lost. So it's kind of a weird thing. I mean, you know, Jerry West, go look at his fucking final. It's like 1 of 7 or something like that. Well, it's because he was facing a better team. Like Wilt Chamberlain and Russell, you know, offensively, Chamberlain was way better. But Russell had – I think he might be better at defense overall, maybe a better basketball player. I don't know about that, though. But he had the better team. He had the more Hall of Famers. So, you know what? I mean, if we're just going to go off of, well, because he won 6, all right, then how about 11 and 13 years? I mean, does that make Russell the best all time because he won 11 out of – they won 5 in a row or 4 in a row or whatever. Like, that's fucking nuts. But then you got to look at who they're playing, how big the league was, yada, yada, yada. But I think we should let LeBron finish his career too. You know what I mean? The one thing is, they never were underdogs in any of their finals ever. That first finals, how that people talk about that Lakers squad, and like, oh, I thought he was gonna win. I didn't know too many people that thought they were gonna lose that Lakers thing, because they were not the same squad. Kareem wasn't even on the team. Like, they weren't the same squad. So they never were the underdogs in the finals. So, you know, you gotta play that into this stuff too. So it's interesting, but let's zip through some of this here. Now, this is just like the NCAA, isn't it? Here, they come out with this. So the new Title 11 regulations no longer require coaches to report sexual misconduct, and this actually comes from the U.S. Department of Education, led by Education Secretary Betsy DeVos announced a new federal regulation. So this isn't actually NCAA that changed requirements on who must report assaults and allegations and all that. Now, they also kind of, just to kind of two-part it, they did say that, you know, they expanded, the NCAA expanded their policy to require student athletes to annually disclose sexual violence history. Okay, that can be cool, but if you haven't got, like we said, I think we talked about this earlier, last week or early in the show, I mean, that doesn't make any sense, because if you haven't been, like, if the school or anybody hasn't found out, how many people are going to fucking be honest in that situation? That I don't know. It just, it lends itself for corruption. But what do you think of this whole no longer required for coaches or ADs, the university itself, to report sexual misconduct?
I think that it shows how sports in our country polarize people. I mean, I'm down here in Texas, and I've had this conversation with legit probably 20 to 25 different football coaches. And my take is, you know, Art Briles is kind of a douche. Like, he covered up like so much awful stuff in Baylor. Yeah, but dude, the offense he ran and the teams he created and the run and gun offense, yeah, like people, like, it's not all Art Briles. That always is responsible. It's never like, oh, by the way, like some, like, women really like had some awful life events happen. Yeah, but he was a god of Texas, and he created an offense, and you see what he did. Like, he created the 5-wide offense. Like, that's what he's known for. So it's like, okay, like, just, all right, fine. You won the argument. If you're going to put football above rape allegations and awful ways of running a school, then cool. Like, I'm not going to have the debate anymore, because you're...
And they got in trouble, too. It's not like some speculation if something happened, you know? They got in serious trouble.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't even like a debatable, well, did Browns really do anything? Well, yeah, actually, yeah, he did. Actually, they ripped out the whole damn program. But the response, and again, I know I'm in Texas, but again, that's, well, he's a football god. So, it, you know, other, you know, did he really know that much? Like, it's not all on him. I think that has been the common reply to people who don't care, or people that love their team so much. And again, I'll admit that, okay, Carolina, they had some fake history classes. Okay, that does look bad. But if that's what I have to defend myself for my school, like, that one I can kind of stomach. You can give me shit for that. It's all good. But, you know, we've now had the paternal story. We've had the Art Briles incident. We had, you know, Izzo with Michigan State. I think the NCAA is just realizing, this sounds really shitty, but, like, we're going to keep having these issues, especially now with how social media is. And 9 out of 10 times, the people in the schools, when they realize they have sports and so much money involved, they're not going to do the right thing. So this is taking the burden off of people to do the right thing, because in our society, sports trumps individual people's, normally in this situation, females, then they're just too small of a piece of the pie.
Yeah, I don't money in the real world, too.
Yeah.
You know? You could see some of these dudes get off on rape or only have to go for 6 months to jail for rape, and you're just like, how is this? It really just adds fuel to the fire of how we go about the way these judges handle rapes in our country. It's just despicable a lot of times, and this is just adding to it, dude. And we wonder why they're going to get to the pros and do the same shit.
Yeah, and you know, I say this laughing, but I'm honestly say it with a smile. If there were more women like Earl Thomas's wife, she might be a little more steady in this country. Like, you know, you can say what we want about what she did. You know, most women in our country, the athletes have all the power and control, and she wasn't going to deal with that shit. But for the most part, not many women can stand up for themselves like that or handle themselves in that situation. And they just become, you know, a person like, oh, you know, the football players did this or something. Like, okay, well, what right. Tough shit. You're not involved. Well, and I read that article too, and it's really stupid. And they're like, well, any incident that happens off of campus doesn't have to be reported. Okay, so let's just pick random Kentucky University football players go to a bar that's off campus, and like, three guys like do stuff to a girl they shouldn't. Well, since it was off Kentucky's campus and they weren't on campus, then it's okay. like the not being on campus makes like
there's a ton of bars that are just barely off campus too. You know what I mean? So
So
a good part of the shit is gonna have to deal with that night. Is odds are it's on campus and off campus. You know?
Yeah, it's just morally it makes you scratch your head. But again, in I just say one more time. When I mentioned Browse being a bad person, everyone always said, "Dude, he was a goat football coach, and that's all that matters."
Right.
Well, that explains why we're at the point where we are now, which is super sad. But it will give the NCAA a break from, you know, hell, maybe they did this to avoid Izzo getting in trouble. I mean, that dude is seen as a god coaching, and he was, you know, involved in some stuff like this. So they're like, you know what, we've had enough. Let's make this rule, Chris. And I hate saying that, but I don't see how anyone else could tell me any differently.
Yeah, I mean, there is still some information that is going to come out on that stuff. So I don't want to go too far down that line of what's exactly the truth and what's been reported, because sometimes that is a miss. But that's a good point. That's a really good point. And just in general, I like what you said. It's just really a money decision where they're like, let's try to take as much risk. Let's let the player show his sexual history every time. Well, I mean, if you didn't get in trouble, then you're not going to, you know, like – it's just a weird thing. Let's go real quick with this kind of a quick take on this, and then we'll shut down the show. Five potential effects if the NCAA passed a one-time transfer exemption rule. I like this rule of like, hey, if you want to transfer once, that's cool. You can transfer and play right away, but then that's your only transfer. So it makes kids think about, okay, well, I only have one of these, rather than in between, or rather than you see these, you know, star quarterbacks going head to head in the next year, one dude bails, that type of thing. Some of the effects, though, obviously tampering, and when we bring it up, money and all this stuff, there is going to be some tampering in there, and coaches finding out, well, we could get this guy for next year for sure. This guy goes on to say, this is from collegehoopstoday.com, mid-majors will essentially become junior colleges because, you know, you'll find out you're pretty good. I mean, sometimes it's like that with mid-majors right now anyway. You find out you're good after a couple of years, and then you go and transfer. So, I could understand that when it's not a year sit-out thing. More roster turnover in general. We see that already, but it does seem like when you look at the Gophers roster, it's going to look way different. Building programs to become, you know, like program building becomes obsolete. I don't believe in that 100%, but I do understand what he's saying, the potential of elimination of waivers. He said that's a good thing. And I don't know. He goes on to list a couple other things. But overall, I love the one – you got one shot to do it, dude. Make it the right choice. And the fact that you don't have to wait a year, because sometimes there's a new coordinator that comes in and, you know, it doesn't fit your game. So you got, you know, recruited – and on some other stuff. And so why can't that, you know, the fact that a coach can go into a locker room or have a lecture in a room and get his whole, you know, team together and sit there and tell you, don't listen to these reports, yada, yada, yada. I'm here to stay. And then that night he dips and the next day he's done. That's bullshit. You know what I mean? I like this one and done. Or one chance to do it, and that's it. Because I think maybe you could put a waiver if someone did it, and then someone almost is about to die in their family, and they want to go closer to home or something like that. Maybe you could get that in there. But I like the one – you got one opportunity, so it can't be multiple because kids these days especially – but even when you're a 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old kid, you can't be having them switch every other year either.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that everything you said in that article, none of those jumped out to me as a negative. To put a positive spin after the awful topic we just spoke about, to wrap this up, I like this rule. And again, it's like I remember the Tom Herman speech of like, guys, I'm your coach. I'm going to be with you. A day later, peace, going to Texas. It's like, what? So coaches can lie to their kids and not have any repercussions. So what the hell keeps a kid from wanting to leave, or maybe the coach did them wrong or something to that effect? Yeah, I completely agree. And in football, I mean, there's so many damn kids. I don't think it's really an issue. I mean, if you know, if Oklahoma wants you to come play quarterback for them, you're probably not transferring to LSU the next year. You know, they're, I think that people can move around is realistic, but I think that it's more so realistic to basketball players who maybe they want to leave after their senior year. I think basketball is a little more common, but to get to his point about how, well, you know, this could let teams load up or something. Well, you still have roster spots, which are limited. And let's just use my, you know, North Carolina, for example. Like, Roy's got a hell of a recruiting class coming in. So it would be really stupid for some kid from Temple to want to transfer to Carolina this year just because, you know, they want to load up Carolina. Well, yeah, but if Roy's bringing in four freshmen, like, you're not going to play if you're a junior or senior, you know. So I don't think you can really stack a deck. And if you want to stack a deck for a team like – DePaul or, you know, or Chicago or Cleveland State, like, okay, like you're stacking the deck for a really low mid major, like, okay, that might get better, but that's not going to impact the national overall picture of the tournament. So I don't really see this as a downfall. If a kid wants to leave, he can leave. It's a one-time deal. As you said, he doesn't have to sit out a year, and it gives players a little bit of a fairness. Cause again, now if coaches were saints all the time, I wouldn't, I maybe have a different opinion, but I've heard so many stories, even Jimbo Fisher. I'll be back. And Jimbo Fisher never even told the guys he was leaving, period.
Yeah. So, I mean, this happens all the time.
Yeah. So hell, I'm completely fine with this. Give, you know, set some rules so it's not crazy, but I have nothing bad to say about this. Gives the athletes a little bit of a choice that they deserve. Yeah. That's all I got for that. That's a good rule. Good rule.
And just a heads up, we're going to do one more show next week. We are going to debate this top, I think it's top 74 or something like that, the best all-time players ESPN list, which some of it's really quality, other of it, some of it is just garbage. So we're going to debate that back and forth. I already saw a couple of them where I'm like, oh, my God, they got that guy higher than him. Oh, my goodness gracious. I mean, they got Dirk over KG. I'll stop right there. No, some guys behind Nash are just like, so that guy's, Steve Nash is better than him? Is this all-time offensive players? What list are we looking at here? So we're going to debate that. We're also going to talk that Houston squad 94-95 back-to-back championships going against the 92-91-93 Bulls, which could have been a thing if Jordan didn't retire, and how that team would match up. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we'll have some more news. We'll talk a little bit more college stuff because there is some news coming out that just came out, like, recently, and it's going to come out by the time we do a show. So unless you got any, you know, more words to say, why don't you shut us down here, sir?
As usual, stay safe. It does seem like we're making some progress as a country, so hopefully it stays that way. I do hope we get basketball, baseball, hockey, and football. I hope that this fall is like the best sport ever, or best fall sports ever, just to enjoy time at home with the family. But yeah, so we'll get there, though. We'll get there. But until then, we're thankful for listening to our podcast. Hopefully you're living in a state that's warm like me, so you can go for a run every day. Until then, the boys are out. Have a great night. Peace.